Great. So we've spent some time in the last two sessions setting the scene, and now we're going to look at your basic ministry skills. So what is it that you would be doing in an encounter with a person? And I'm also wanting to highlight a few pitfalls, things that may, you know, you may come across or you may end up doing yourself, which could be detrimental either to you or the process with the person. So if we look at some practical techniques now, if you actually are sitting with the person, and look, sometimes this is not going to be a formal setup thing. If you're involved in the ministry at church, it's going to be a lot more formalized. It's going to be an appointment that you arrange beforehand. You're going to have to ensure that the space that you meet in is private. But sometimes these things are going to occur in the coffee room at work, or before a lecture starts, somebody may open up. And so one just has to be aware of the context and be adaptable and able to apply these techniques no matter where you are, and not be too rigid about it all. So if we look at a few pointers, the main skill and technique that you have to offer is the fact that you can listen, and the fact that you can be a sounding board, and that you are non-judgmental, and that you come in love. And so I just really want to encourage you, when you're sitting with somebody and they're perhaps unpacking all their problems, you know, when often goes into performance mode and feels like you've got to have answers for all these questions that they're asking or things that they're describing. But really the most important gift that you can give them is just being able to listen and giving them an experience of feeling heard and understood. So if that's all that you do, you've got a thumbs up from me. I think you've been successful. And as we said before, it models to them the relationship that they have with God, that God listens and that God hears. So it's really essential if you are able to do that, because it opens a way for them to connect with the Father. I often say, you know, what is important is to be prayerful in the way that you go about these things. So if this is more formal and it is an arranged appointment, then you can take time beforehand, before you meet up with a person, to commit the whole session to the Lord and to ask the Holy Spirit to come and to lead and guide you and to inspire what is spoken about. If the whole encounter sprung upon you and kind of just happens as you're going about your daily business, you still can be connected with the Holy Spirit. So don't be afraid if the person has spoken and perhaps unpacked a bunch of things, to say to them, you know, would they feel comfortable with just committing the time to the Lord, just asking the Lord to give answers, even perhaps before you speak. So really, right from the beginning, setting the scene where you are facilitating a process of them connecting with God. And it's not something where they are just connecting with you and God's not involved in it all. I spoke just now about setting or place. And, you know, right in the beginning, we spoke about confidentiality. So one of the things you do need to be aware of is that sometimes people become emotional in a place that's not really conducive to containing them. So if you find that someone's burst into tears right in the middle of an open plan office, and they've turned to you for help, you know, you might want to take them aside to a space that's more private, where you can, and perhaps you are able to set up an appointment with somebody. If someone asks for help, perhaps over email, and you can set up an appointment with them to meet to discuss these things, then try to bear in mind that it needs to be a private space, somewhere where they would feel free to chat openly about their issues. Because remember, you don't know what they're going to speak about necessarily. It needs to be a space where you're not going to be interrupted the whole time, say by a waitress, or even in your own home, sometimes if you've got younger children or older children, just people who might come and interrupt the session at a time when actually that person is needing your attention. So These things can't always be prevented, but where you can and where you are able to prepare, it's helpful to think about providing that safe space. And I tend to carry one of those little packets of tissues in my handbag, so that I've always got them with me. But if you can as well, make sure there's tissues, maybe make sure there's a glass of water, so that if the person becomes incredibly overwhelmed emotionally, there are things at your disposal that you can use to calm them down and just to communicate to them that you care about them and that you want to reassure them. So another thing that is really important is that, you know, you might want to have to break the ice. Sometimes someone comes and there's a whole build up and they're feeling really anxious. And as I said, this could even be an issue that they've dealt, you know, that they've been struggling with for years and years and years. So especially if they've arranged an appointment to see you, you might want to say something like, "So tell me, you know, what led to you asking for my help?" Sounds like a, you know, very mundane or even a silly question, but it sometimes just breaks the ice that they can tell you their story. Another way of kind of initiating the conversation is to say to them, you know, "Tell me your story. Tell me what's happened in your life up to this point." So you'll be able to glean from them how comfortable they are. Sometimes things just come out spontaneously and you won't have to lead them, but other times you might need to initiate the whole process just to make it a little bit easier for them. Notes are a bit controversial. I'm somebody who likes to take notes when I'm counseling somebody in therapy, but that's also because there's a legal onus on me to keep notes as a psychologist. Obviously, if you are just doing this on a very casual basis because somebody spontaneously come to you, there isn't that legal onus. If you are going to be ministering in a church setting, part of the personal encounter ministry, then you will need to take notes. So just depending on the setting and the responsibilities that you have, be aware that you might have to record and keep confidential what transpired in the process. But sometimes just taking notes for your own personal use is helpful. So it helps you to focus. It helps you to keep track of perhaps what you experience the Holy Spirit is saying to you, as well as what the person's saying to you, because sometimes that can be a bit of a juggle. And it's also quite nice that if you are somebody who forgets easily and you kind of need continuity, if you're seeing the person say a few times, you can always go back and check what was it exactly that was said, or perhaps if you gave them homework, you're aware of you know, what you gave to them, so that you can check up on it later. So with notes, the main thing is, though, you need to make sure that those can't be read by somebody else or accessed by someone else. So, be careful what you do with them, where you keep them. If you're going to dispose of them, make sure you shred them. I often say if they're going to be electronic notes, then put a password on them so people can't track the notes and maybe can't identify the person. One thing you do need to be aware of regarding notes is that You don't want the note taking to cause a distance between you and the person coming for help. So if you're kind of buried in your notes and so focused on taking diligent notes that the person doesn't feel heard or understood, that is definitely going to be an issue, and it's going to impede their sense of connecting with you and feeling accepted. So yeah, I mentioned it previously, but remaining neutral, not being judgmental. Sometimes it's difficult, but it's so vital to this process and to really communicating love and acceptance to the individual. So again, if you're focusing on them, if you're focusing on listening, normally that comes sort of quite naturally. It's so important to get the buy-in from the individual whom you are ministering to. So, often we can get so excited because we might see areas that we can help, and there might be, you know, especially if you've done the self-assessment questionnaire, you can see that there's a whole bunch of things that you want to, you know, get involved with. And you can perhaps run away in a sense and almost take over the whole session. And I really want to encourage you to stick with where the person's at. Make sure that they are understanding what you're saying. Make sure that they are connecting with God as well, and really make sure that there is buy-in from their side, that they want to change, that they want to see transformation in their life, that they understand how to implement these things, and that they're willing to do it. So, you know, sometimes you get a case where someone's asking for help, but in reality, they don't really want to change. Obviously, that's a hard one, and you know that might only come out a little bit later after you've seen them a few times, and you realize that they're not doing homework, and they're not actually really making the changes that are being suggested. And then you'll have to confront them on this. And often that is not because, you know, they're rebellious or they're resistant. It might just be because there's something that they are scared of, or scared of addressing, scared of confronting. And you know, then that's the issue that needs to initially be looked at before you can make other suggestions and other changes in other areas. So really be aware of buy-in, and be aware of collaborating with and partnering with the person so that it's a joint thing, that they feel supported in it, and it's not you taking full responsibility. I always say, you know, you've got to, if you as the facilitator feel tired and drained after a session, if you kind of, you know, almost, you know, really don't look forward to meeting with the person, then probably there's an imbalance. Probably you're doing too much of the work. And you probably need to look at what's going on. Why is the other person not taking responsibility? So this is really vital. Along with this, I think I also want to warn you is, you know, sometimes we get into a bit of a performance mode, and, you know, we have certain goals and ideals that we want to achieve through this process, and we kind of put a bit of pressure on the person that they need to change and they need to transform instantaneously. And, you know, often people have sat with these issues for years, perhaps even decades, and it's very unrealistic to expect immediate transformation in a series, you know, of a few encounters. So we're not saying that that's impossible, because God's healing can be instantaneous, and I've experienced that. But often, especially to do with things on a soul level, the transformation takes time, because although there might be a supernatural spiritual healing that takes place, the emotional healing, the renewing of the mind, the changing of patterns of behavior that are so habitual and so ingrained in who the person is, that is actually what takes time. So I just want to kind of warn you to not set yourself and the person up for failure with an expectation that these things can happen, you know, within a few encounters, and to be patient with them and with yourselves. There's people that I see and have seen for longer than sort of 7 years, you know, probably I'll see them for a good few many years. And that's just because the process takes time, and also because some people choose to make the whole process of counseling part of their daily lifestyle. So, you know, you kind of, sometimes we approach these things with a certain idea or understanding of what has to happen, and it's those expectations that limit the process. So I just sort of am asking you to be open-minded about it, and to allow the Holy Spirit to do what needs to be done for this specific person at this time and this season in their life. One of the things that you have available to you as a Christian is your relationship with God and your connection with the Holy Spirit. So as I said, before any encounter with somebody, to commit the time in prayer, but also not to be afraid of praying with the person. In fact, that's often the most useful advice or input that you can give, is asking the Lord and modeling to them how to connect with God. So don't end a session before you've taken some time out to pray. And also be aware of, you know, if you're meeting for a certain amount of time, don't allow talking and advice giving to gobble up all the time, that there's no time to pray afterwards. So really be aware of prioritizing prayer and making sure that it's part of the whole process, because it makes a huge difference. I know often it's in the prayer phase of intervention that I'm bowled over by what the Holy Spirit's saying. I almost need to apply it to my own life. So, you know, God is ultimately the counselor. He's the one who brings wise counsel, and so you need to make space for that practically. Spoken a little bit about homework. it's really something I'd encourage for you to implement in the sessions. It is helpful, as I said, as a way of assessing whether the person is invested in the process, because you can quite easily see whether they're implementing stuff, whether they're working towards transformation. But it also means it's practical. And you know, sometimes listening is enough, and just being a sounding board is what the person needs, and it brings a sense of relief. But often people feel helped when there's something practical that they can do or implement. So examples of this may be things like, right, completing the self-assessment questionnaire that they bring to the next session. Or it might be something like looking at the three different areas of their life, body, soul, and spirit, and perhaps just aiming to complete one goal in each of those. So, you know, if there's no exercise happening, they might want to walk once around the block in the week to come. You need to actually kind of taper it to what the person is capable of achieving. Somebody else who's an absolute athlete and, you know, is at the gym 7 days of a week, obviously walking once around the block is not going to be great homework for them. So you need to be aware of where the person's at. Looking at things like quiet times may even be something that you want to set for homework. If you can see the person is not regularly connecting with the Lord, setting up an accountability relationship to help them with that. Looking at things like the nutrition. And so defining it quite distinctly, and then making sure that you check in at the next meeting with them whether they've been able to do these things. Again, it's not to engender performance. There's no pressure put on them. I always say to people, look, this is the ideal. This is what you and I think would be worthwhile working towards in this week. But if you don't get it right, that's absolutely fine. We'll try again next time. So you're not putting pressure on them, but you are actually also making them accountable to try to implement certain things in their life in order to engender transformation. So now I want to look at a few potential pitfalls in the facilitation process. So areas that you may kind of, you know, get caught up in, traps that you may get stuck in. And many of them I've mentioned before, but I want to re-emphasize them because basically these are the things that we all tend to get stuck with. First one, I've emphasized it a lot, but it's, you know, do not create a dependent relationship between you and the person looking for help. So it is hard, this one, often because the person coming for help is obviously open to you and experiences you as loving and caring and understanding them. So their expectations are often very much inclined towards, you know, wanting to become dependent on you, and you're going to have to manage this one. But really, it isn't helpful. It tends to, you know, set yourself and the process up for failure, and also draws them away from God. And ultimately, what we're wanting to do is help them connect with God, help them connect with the Holy Spirit. You know, in life in general, it's a process of maturing and becoming more independent, where we start off as an infant, where we're completely dependent on our parents for all of our needs to be fulfilled. And hopefully we end up as a grandparent, where we are not only able to provide for ourselves and our families and the generations to come, but we can actually leave a legacy. And so if you can bear that in mind in this whole process, that's actually essentially what you're also trying to, you know, to ensure happens, is that the person moves from perhaps a place of dependency or insecurity or an inability to function in certain areas, to where they become a lot more independent in their functioning, a lot more full of self-confidence and able to really impart things even to others, looking beyond themselves. So where you are engendering a dependency relationship, you're not actually helping with any of that. As I've said previously, listening is so important. And, you know, I don't know if there is really a ratio, but I almost want to say you need to be listening for at least 70% of the time, talking for maybe 30%. I think that's probably even too much. So really being aware of being an active listener, you know, taking in what's being said to you, but not sort of talking the whole time or giving advice. So the person needs to feel that in the space, in the time that they had with you, they were able to express what they needed to express and convey that information, and not really that they were bombarded by a whole bunch of advice or information from your side. And finally, the other pitfall is, you know, responsibility. And just being aware of the fact that you are not responsible for this person, and you're not responsible for the transformation, and you're not responsible for, you know, for any aspect that needs to be changed. So, yes, you're there, and there's a responsibility and commitment that you have towards them because they've asked you for this help. But they need to be the ones that actually take responsibility for the process. They need to be the ones that implement the hard work and that make the changes. So, yeah, that's really important that you know, that you kind of focus on these three things. Some of the legal considerations that could potentially be pitfalls. If this is a casual process that's just happening spontaneously, then it's perhaps not as important as something that's more formalized or as part of a ministry in the church. But I just want you to be aware of them anyway, because I think these are things that we need to consider. We need to perhaps be aware of so that we are protected and the other person's protected. So the first thing is to remember you're not a counselor, and, you know, not to set up the relationship in any way that may indicate that you are. So you want to try and right from the beginning be very clear about what their and your expectation of the process can be. From a legal perspective, if the person discloses information regarding abuse, so if it's sexual or emotional or physical abuse, you and you're the first person ever to hear about this, then there actually is a legal onus on you to report that. I would advise you, if something like that does come forward, you know, you would then need to seek help from somebody who is a professional. So, you know, contain the person, pray with them, be loving towards them in a caring way, and then ask for permission to disclose it, perhaps with them, to somebody else who's more experienced, so that the process can be taken forward from a legal perspective. Similarly, if the person discloses perhaps suicidal thoughts or homicidal thoughts, so, you know, wanting to kill themselves or murder somebody else, again, there is actually a legal onus on you to do something about that. So again, I would then suggest that you refer to somebody professional. Obviously, that's not the kind of, oh, I was so irritated I could kill them. But you've got to discern, you know, is this something that, you know, that could potentially actually play out in real life? Or is it just sort of someone saying something for emphasis because they're feeling quite emotional in the moment? Thirdly, medical or financial advice. Again, I would suggest you stay away from those things if you're not trained as a medical doctor or as a financial advisor. So sometimes people will come and they're having issues around finances, or you can see it's an area in their life in terms of their functioning that, you know, their budget is never working out. They're struggling with stewardship. They're struggling with tithing, things like that. Just be so cautious about what advice you give. So stick to biblical principles, but don't kind of tell them where to invest their money or which bank to go to or which retirement annuity is the best, because you don't know if that's not your field of expertise. And even if it is your field of expertise, they're not paying you to give them that advice. So I would rather say stay away from that, because you're blurring the boundaries then between work and ministry. And similarly with medical advice, you know, sometimes what can happen is somebody comes and they have a history of depression, they're doing quite well, they may be just wanting to discuss a certain area of it with you. And then they ask you whether they should leave their medication because, you know, they are doing so well. You don't want to be telling somebody if they should or shouldn't be on medication if you're not a psychiatrist or a medical doctor. So just be very cautious. Sometimes we give over information without even intending to do so. So just be aware of the source of your information and the motivation behind it. And don't give counsel that you actually aren't qualified to give. And finally, I also want to suggest that you counsel somebody of the same gender. So This is really just to protect you, that there can't be any accusations made against you, that you maybe did something sexually inappropriate with the person. Obviously, with, you know, with homosexuality, that can happen within the same gender. So this is not a kind of fail-proof concept that I'm conveying, but to be aware as well how you go about relating to the person. So in general, the suggestion is always to not touch physically. So don't hug the person or put your hand on their knee when you're praying for them. Rather to keep a bit of a boundary physically between you and them. Just means that you're safe and that they're safe. And, you know, if it is somebody who has a history of abuse or molestation, it might in any case feel very awkward for them if you're too close to them and you're not respecting their physical boundaries or space. So for somebody who is very loving and very warm, this might feel very awkward and difficult. But sometimes the challenge is being able to learn to convey in words what you're actually wanting to demonstrate through physical touch, but erring away from physical touch in the sessions. If we speak about the practical exercise, we always want to try and look at how can you implement these things and give you some space, you know, now to practice it when it's not the pressure scenario of having somebody sitting with you. So there's three different scenes that I've described, you know, potential problems that might arise, people might bring to you. And what I want you to do is, if you are in a group setting now where you can divide into pairs, then do that. If you're on your own, you're perhaps doing this online, what you can do is imagine yourself at one point as the facilitator or as the person giving ministry, and then at another point as the person coming for ministry. But look at the three different scenarios, and if you're the person coming for help, really live yourself into it. This is where our little Hollywood actresses and actors can come out. But it's helpful because it helps you to empathize with problems that might come your way. And it also helps the person giving the ministry to be confronted with something that's very real. And really using the time now to role play the two different sides. Make sure that you leave time for, you know, to swap over so that the other person gets a chance to be the facilitator as well. And focusing as well on the self-questionnaire. So taking a bit of time to work through it with the person, because that, you know, that is where the process often begins, in order to identify what's really going on here and where the areas of need are.